Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The truth is the most convincing story that maps onto reality, and that's why the central narrative is falling apart.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
We must see the central narrative for the fiction that it is. We are Americans.
While elections are sometimes messy, this was a secure election.
The founders began the fight for human liberty and self-governance, and it's up to us to finish the job.
I tell you what, we are in a truth emergency right now.
This is the end game.
It's Wednesday, April 10th, 2024, the 1176th day of dystopia. I'm your moderator, Chris Paul. Let's be reasonable. A warm welcome and hello to all of you listening to the podcast on the day of its release. The only way to do that is by becoming a paid subscriber at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as little as $50 a year or $5 a month, and in doing so, you will be supporting me, the work I do, and this show as it expands. And if you can't or you simply don't want to, continue listening to the podcast for free a couple days later on a wide variety of podcast platforms and, of course, Rumble. All I ask is that you share it with your friends. You can find the links to the podcast, the writing, the social media, and the merch site by visiting linktree.com/imyourmoderator. So I want to spend most of today on geopolitics, some of the things that are happening around the world, all sorts of big news in Brazil and Ukraine. But before that, let's update some stories that we've been discussing this week. And the first is the Donald Trump hush money trial that is set to begin on Monday of next week. The first criminal prosecution in American history against an American president, and it's being brought by a corrupt DOJ in coordination with an illegitimate president's administration on a novel legal theory for a crime that didn't occur, stemming from a sexual affair that didn't happen. But the indictment and the trial, oh, those are very real. And you'll know they're very real because they all stem from a very real story that was displayed on our televisions for weeks at a time, just about 24 hours a day. You might remember the stars of that period were Stormy Daniels and Michael Avenatti. People thought Michael Avenatti could be the next Democrat candidate for president. That's how smart and crafty he was. That's how aggressive he was. That's how good at attacking Donald Trump he was. Everyone from Anderson Cooper to Rachel Maddow to Bill Maher was kissing Michael Avenatti's ass. They thought he was the man who was going to finally provide that silver bullet that takes down the mean orange monster who just can't stop tweeting. But, you know, things have changed a little bit since then. Michael Avenatti, we're told, is serving a prison term right now for fraud, and apparently he still has access to his Twitter, and he is constantly weighing in on this criminal trial. He's allowed to talk about it, but Donald Trump, of course, is not. He's got a gag order. But as we discussed, he is flagrantly violating that gag order, daring the judge on behalf of the regime to imprison him. This morning, he posted on Truth Social, "The White House thugs should not be allowed to have these dangerous and unfair Biden trials during my campaign for president. All of them, civil and criminal, could have been brought more than 3 years ago. It is an illegal attack on a political opponent. It is communism at its worst and election interference at its best. No such thing has ever happened in our country before. On Monday, I will be forced to sit, gagged, before a highly conflicted and corrupt judge whose hatred for me has no bounds. All of these New York and D.C. quote-unquote judges and prosecutors have the same mindset. Nobody but this Soros prosecutor, Alvin Bragg, wanted to take this ridiculous case. All legal scholars say it is a sham. Biden's DOJ is running the case. Just think of it. These animals want to put the former president of the United States, who got more votes than any sitting president, and the party's Republican candidate, in jail for doing absolutely nothing wrong. It is a rush to the finish. So unfair." And of course, he's correct about all of that. These are all things that we've heard before, but Donald Trump is setting the narrative and providing a clear perspective on exactly what is wrong with this trial going in. That's just point after point after point after point after point, illustrating how this is a kangaroo court and a show trial. This is election interference and nothing else. This trial will be displayed to the nation, and it will already be dead in the water when it begins on Monday. That's how effective this effort has been. Go around and ask people in your life if they think that Donald Trump is guilty of any of this. And if they say yes, then ask them how they know. Ask them to explain it. Ask them what it is Donald Trump has done that would warrant his imprisonment. Now, they've spent 8 years saying that he is guilty of this affair with Stormy Daniels. They love repeating how Donald Trump cheats on his wife with a porn star. Except it never happened, and we've known for years that it never happened. It's not only Donald Trump that denies it, it's Stormy Daniels that denies it. And Trump posted this morning on Truth Social, "Look what was just found. Will the fake news report it?" And he posted the official statement of Stormy Daniels that she made on January 30th, 2018. We've talked about this letter before on this show. Donald Trump is trolling a bit there, maybe trying to draw some attention to it, maybe trying to make it more easily acceptable for people who have never heard Stormy Daniels deny their affair. But here is the letter. "To whom it may concern, over the past few weeks, I have been asked countless times to comment on reports of an alleged sexual relationship I had with Donald Trump many, many, many years ago. The fact of the matter is that each party to this alleged affair denied its existence in 2006, 2011, 2016, 2017, and now again in 2018. I am not denying this affair because I was paid hush money, as has been reported in overseas-owned tabloids. I am denying this affair because it never happened. I will have no further comment on this matter. Please feel free to check me out on Instagram at the Stormy Daniels." That is just viral marketing. What social media awareness that is. And so that is Trump establishing things from the Stormy Daniels direction. He also established the framing from the Michael Avenatti direction as well. He highlighted a post from Michael Avenatti on X, formerly Twitter, Trump saying, Thank you to Michael Avenatti for revealing the truth about two sleazebags who have, with their lies and misrepresentations, cost our country dearly. Here is what Michael Avenatti wrote on X, formerly Twitter. We can't be hypocrites when it comes to the First Amendment. It is outrageous that Cohen and Daniels can do countless TV interviews, post on social, and make money on bogus documentaries all by talking shit about Trump. But he's gagged and threatened with jail if he responds. And again, great point. Isn't it funny how the standard issue villagers on the uniparty left and the uniparty right think that we are all just wowed by a con man? We will believe this grifting liar no matter what he says. And they are content to attempt to put a president in prison based on the inconsistent stories of Stormy Daniels and Michael Cohen. These are the people the TV is convincing them to side with. They make their appearances, say all their anti-Trump things, and the audiences of these shows, these heavily vaccinated child brains, align themselves in common cause, mentally and emotionally, with Stormy Daniels and Michael Cohen. On a long enough timeline, that's not going to work out. But just to be clear, on a short timeline, it could still work out for them. They could get a decision against Donald Trump in Manhattan. And much like that E. Jean Carroll civil trial for defamation, they will think that means that Trump in real life really did the thing he's being accused of and tried for. There are many rugs left to be pulled, and I wouldn't suggest you choosing too many of these to stand on. Just step back and observe. You'll know when your rug has arrived. Now, on Monday, we spent some time discussing Donald Trump's statement on abortion. He made the point that his role as president was to appoint judges who would respect the Constitution enough to overturn Roe versus Wade and send that issue back to the states. That is exactly what he did, exactly what he accomplished. The issue is not a national issue. It can and should be one at the state and local levels. And it's not Donald Trump's responsibility to convince your friends and family and neighbors to change their mind about a moral issue. Donald Trump says he is for the exceptions for rape, incest, and the life of the mother, as was Ronald Reagan 40 years ago, and his role and his duty are fulfilled by that. We talked the other day about the controlled opposition dynamic set up around the abortion issue, and we watched Donald Trump step outside that. And in doing so, he caused the debate within the controlled opposition dynamic to implode. The left is branding Donald Trump as an abortion extremist, which is impossible for anyone who watched his statement, and it is made especially impossible by the reaction of the uniparty right, who are saying Donald Trump is far too soft on abortion. The uniparty left and the uniparty right, as they rehearse again and again and again the conversation that exists within the controlled opposition dynamic, they get into that groove and they don't have anywhere else to go. It's like Trump is standing there in the middle with the uniparty left on one side, the uniparty right on the other, both of them firing away at Donald Trump in the middle, and Trump simply steps out of the way. So they are just firing at one another. Both sides were happy with Roe versus Wade because that made abortion a national issue. And because as a national issue, it's impossible to solve in our political environment, that means it's an evergreen argument. For all time, they can go directly to abortion, just as they can with immigration and certain other issues. And they can turn the intensity of the conflict up so much that they are able to convince the country that entire elections could be decided on this one single issue, and not only at the national level, but within each state and right down into the local community. If they can properly portray a national candidate as having the wrong position on abortion, they can explain how some obscure Democrat won a seat on a school board. Oh, yeah. It was just a wave year for Democrats. They got that blue wave on the back of the abortion issue because the presidential candidate on the Republican side was just too toxic to women. It has been clear since that Dobbs decision that elections were going to be fought this way. They've been attempting to create that environment for this fake 2024 election and campaign season. And Donald Trump simply stepped out of that. Now they are just shooting at each other. Now, I said on Monday, on Telegram at least, I think I mentioned it on here, though, that the whole thing seemed like Donald Trump was getting ahead of something. Why would you just come out on Monday morning and release this statement on abortion that would create all this controversy, sucked all the oxygen out of the room for Monday? Now, it could have been as simple as to continue exposing the whole Con Inc. thing and all of these fake, subversive, supposedly Republican, supposedly conservative media figures and influencers online, almost all of whom, by the way, supported Ron DeSantis. And again, doesn't matter whether Ron himself was kayfabe or not, the media figures weren't. They are explicitly anti-Trump, except when they can say that he's finally doing the right thing and seem like they're on your side. And maybe all that controversy would have been worth it just for that, but it didn't seem like it. It seemed like he was getting ahead of something. And then yesterday, actually, while I was recording this show, the news came down from Arizona. This is NBC News. Arizona Supreme Court rules a near total abortion ban from 1864 is enforceable. The Arizona Supreme Court ruled Tuesday that a 160-year-old near total abortion ban still on the books in the state is enforceable, a bombshell decision that adds the state to the growing list of places where abortion care is effectively banned. The ruling allows an 1864 law in Arizona to stand that made abortion a felony punishable by 2 to 5 years in prison for anyone who performs one or helps a woman obtain one. The law, which was codified in 1901 and again in 1913, outlaws abortion from the moment of conception, but includes an exception to save the woman's life. That Civil War era law, enacted half a century before Arizona even gained statehood, was never repealed, and an appellate court ruled last year that it could remain on the books as long as it was, quote-unquote, harmonized with a 2022 law, leading to substantial confusion in Arizona regarding exactly when a pregnancy abortion was outlawed. The decision, which could shutter abortion clinics in that state, effectively undoes a lower court's ruling that stated that a more recent 15-week ban from March 2022 superseded the 1864 law. The Arizona Supreme Court said it would put its decision on hold for 14 days, writing that it would send the case back to a lower court so that court could consider additional constitutional challenges that haven't been cleared up yet. Attorney General Chris Mays, a Democrat, said moments after the ruling that she would not enforce the law. "Let me be completely clear. As long as I am Attorney General, no woman or doctor will be prosecuted under this draconian law in this state," Mays said in a statement, adding that the decision was unconscionable and an affront to freedom. Now, it's also an affront to freedom that Chris Mays is pretending to serve as a legitimate attorney general in Arizona. Chris Mays is the product of a rigged and stolen election that is actually still under contest. Now, if we lived in a rational and just world, that statement alone from Chris Mays would be enough to remove her from office. She just said she does not intend to enforce the law of Arizona. That is the job she was supposedly, but not quite, elected to do. In fact, she took an oath to do that job. This is the oath for a constitutional officer and employee of Arizona. "I do solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution and laws of the state of Arizona, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same and defend them against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and I will faithfully and impartially discharge the duties of the office of Attorney General according to the best of my ability, so help me God. She is stating flat out that she does not intend to enforce the law of Arizona, which means that she does not intend to impartially discharge the duties of her office. Now, to be fair, if enforcing the law of Arizona violates her conscience, then she shouldn't have to enforce the law. But she should immediately resign. Because when people who swear an oath to uphold and enforce the law decide to usurp the legislature's proper authority in making the law by making their own law, well, they are declaring their unfitness for office. They don't have to violate their conscience. They simply have to resign. It is insane that we accept the idea that someone in office might simply publicly state that they're not going to do their job and that we're just like, oh, well, what moral courage that person has. We have, as a society, adopted the mindset of left-wing protesters, where we imagine that the bravest thing in the world is doing whatever you were already wanting to do anyway. As you might expect, people went crazy over this decision. And we'll get back to that in a second, but one more important note here. In a 4-2 ruling, the court's majority concluded that the 15-week ban, quote, does not create a right to or otherwise provide independent statutory authority for an abortion that repeals or restricts, end quote, the Civil War era ban, but, quote, rather is predicated entirely on the existence of a federal constitutional right to an abortion since disclaimed, end quote, by the Dobbs decision that overturned Roe versus Wade. So that 2022 law that is being argued should take precedence over this old law was premised entirely in the eyes of the court on the since disclaimed, quote unquote, constitutional right enabled by Roe versus Wade. The statute rested on Roe versus Wade remaining in place. Roe versus Wade is no longer in place. Therefore, that statute is meaningless. So they put that law in place in 2022, hoping to preempt the Dobbs decision. And now they've spent 2 years on lawfare over that law that relies on Roe v. Wade having remained in place. It really is amazing the lengths they are willing to go to protect the abortion industry. I mean, a woman's right to choose. But don't worry, the pro-abortionists are not done fighting. They will never give up. Further down in the article. The issue, however, could soon be in the hands of the voters. Oh, a ballot measure. Abortion rights groups in the state are likely to succeed in their goal of putting a proposed constitutional amendment on the November ballot that would create a fundamental right to receive abortion care up until fetal viability or about the 24th week of pregnancy. So they believe that they can convince Arizonans that that is the consensus position. People don't want to ban abortion entirely, and they won't get upset about that position until it goes beyond 6 months. A six-month-old fetus, and Arizona wants to make sure that that can still be eliminated and have its tissue harvested. And I'm sorry to say it that way, but it is that way, and it's important to say it the way it is. If voters approved the ballot measure, it would effectively undo the 1864 ban that now remains law in the state. It would bar the state from restricting abortion care in situations where the health or life of the pregnant person is at risk after the point of viability, according to the treating health care professional. That ballot effort is one of at least 11 across the country that seek to put the issue directly in the hands of voters, a move that has the potential to significantly boost turnout for Democratic candidates emphasizing the issue. And there you have it. It will be the justification for why so many Democrats came out and voted. We might even have more Democrats than we had in 2020 when there were 81 million real lawful American voters that showed up to vote for the fake president, despite the fact that he is a corrupt and compromised, demented old pervert who was mentored by a Klansman. And they're going to do it again. They are going to make abortion the law of the land in each and every state through ballot measures. Now, maybe you're one of those people who thinks our elections might be a little stolen, but they're not that stolen. Or they stole them by harvesting the most mail-in ballots and banking their votes by voting early. Or they stole it by censoring the Hunter Biden laptop, or by FBI interference, or they stole it legally by getting those laws changed before the election and overcoming any court challenges. Hey, that's the game, and they played it the best. Looking at you, Megyn Kelly. Looking at you, little Ben Shapiro. All of these Con Inc. cuckolds and traitors who assume you're so stupid that you would believe them. And then when it turns out they're wrong, well, hey, you guys were all wrong in the same way. So you can't blame Megyn Kelly or Ben Shapiro for lying to you. They didn't know anything more than you did. It was impossible to know anything more. I mean, if the election was that obviously stolen, well, why did all those courts decide the other way? Why didn't Bill Barr do anything? You're going to get all the excuses, but the fact is, they just lied. Because you see, the thing is, our elections are so complicated and convoluted, specifically so they can be stolen really easily, and that no one can ever hold anyone else accountable. That's why the system's set up this way. And when you get told on November 6th of this year that abortion is now legal forever in your conservative state, because your elections are still stolen, you can call on Ben Shapiro and Megyn Kelly and thank them for how hard they argued that Donald Trump was the guy who was weak on abortion. Not like them, the heroes. You are being told, you are being shown what the plan is. The plan is to make this fake 2024 election and campaign season all about abortion. Donald Trump and the MAGA extremists want to ban abortion across the board, everywhere, no matter the circumstances, even in the case of rape, incest, or the life of the mother. That was the planned attack against Trump and MAGA. That attack doesn't work, doesn't exist. Trump already took that away, no matter how hard the uniparty right tried to give that back to the uniparty left on Monday. It didn't work. And Trump timed that because this decision was coming the next day, and it would be the perfect opportunity for the mainstream media to go all in. Uniparty left and uniparty right, Donald Trump is the problem when it comes to abortion. The left would have been losing their minds. Donald Trump is going to push for a nationwide ban on abortion. That would have been all the talk everywhere. They would have made it part of his identity. Donald Trump is the face of a nationwide ban on abortion. That is what we would have been told. And then Trump would have come out and responded and given a statement similar to the one he gave on Monday. Except if you think about the timing, making that statement after being labeled the man who is in favor of a nationwide abortion ban, well, that doesn't work so well, because then it makes it seem like Donald Trump is scared of the power of the Democrats' pro-abortion movement. It would allow them to declare victory immediately, and that victory would seem like something that would last through the fall. Donald Trump and those MAGA extremists are trying to pull off a nationwide ban on abortion. Arizona is the model. This is just the start. This is what they really want. Look at what these Republicans have done. And then they are able to effectively sell the idea that Democrat turnout spiked in states across the country because people wanted to vote in favor of the abortion industry. I mean, women's right to choose. And once all of those pro-abortion people came out to vote, of course they're going to vote against Donald Trump in the presidential contest. In fact, they'll vote against Republicans up and down the ticket. It doesn't matter how bad the 4 years of Biden's fake presidency were. They came out to vote to make sure that fetuses could still be eliminated and have their tissue harvested on behalf of the abortion industry and big pharma and, of course, academia. The uniparty right is not taking the position they're taking out of principled moral purity. They're taking that position to be anti-Trump, and they know that the potential consequence is making abortion far more widespread than it was before. They're willing to risk that to remove Donald Trump from the picture. Do you really think that all of these Con Inc. figures who pushed the vaccines and said it was a good idea and then came back later and said, oh, whoops, I guess we were wrong about that. Do you really think that those people who worked on behalf of Big Pharma throughout the very deadly pandemic and through the vaccine mandates and all of it, oh, I know, they thought mandates were going too far. Yes, yes, I understand. You really think those people would not do the business of pharma when it comes to abortion because they're principled and morally pure? They care about life? They're warmongers. They are actively trying to make sure that Donald Trump and MAGA candidates up and down the ballot lose, or at least are said to be losers, because they also want to make sure that they can keep the stolen elections in place, which is why they haven't talked about them virtually at all for 3.5 years. And they still call Joe Biden a legitimate president. Some of them even pretend that Biden got 81 million real lawful American votes. And the ones who don't have no answer when you ask them things like, hey, why are you calling that guy president if you know he got there through election fraud? Now, I want to play a little clip of CNN's Jake Tapper talking to illegitimate Arizona Senator Mark Kelly.
But what we could see from the former president and others is a national abortion ban.
He didn't rule it out when he gave his statement yesterday. He didn't rule it out.
Well, and he also bragged about being responsible for the Dobbs decision, for this right going away, and bragging that he's responsible for that means that he is responsible for what happened today in the Arizona Supreme Court.
Now, I played Donald Trump's statement the other day, and we just went through the mainstream media coverage of Arizona's Supreme Court decision and why that decision was made. That wasn't a pro-life decision. That was a simple recognition that the Supreme Court had already overturned a foundational element of the statute in question. Jake Tapper and Mark Kelly are both fully aware of the facts of the issue at hand. They saw Trump's statement. They're aware of the Arizona decision. Mark Kelly is saying that because Donald Trump bragged about getting Roe v. Wade overturned based on his appointment of Supreme Court justices, that means he's responsible for an Arizona abortion ban. That doesn't make any sense. Jake Tapper tried a different approach. Well, Trump didn't rule it out. Therefore, we can pretend that's what he wants, even though he didn't say that at all. And if we're being honest, Donald Trump did rule it out. He said it wasn't a national issue. He said, everybody's always wanted it returned to the states. I got it returned to the states. That's where the issue should be decided. That means he does not support a nationwide abortion ban. It couldn't be any clearer. And because of the fact that Trump put that statement out on Monday, preempting all of this means he does not have to defend himself now. He does not have to come out and release a statement that says he opposes a nationwide ban on abortion. Anybody who saw the statement he made already knows that. And Mark Kelly's argument didn't work at all either. He's not going to be able to take that back to Arizona and tell that to Arizona voters who are probably more well aware than anyone in the country that their elections are stolen. No one's going to believe that pro-abortion industry voters won the election up and down the ballot for Democrats this year with the fake president after another 6.5 months of stolen elections being exposed and Joe Biden's incompetence being exposed, as well as the complicity of the uniparty right. This is their strongest tactic, and it is blowing up in their faces. They are losing their strongest narrative weapon because the controlled opposition dynamic is imploding because Donald Trump simply stepped outside it. That is how powerful that is. All right, so we are going to move in the direction of geopolitics by way of big tech and government censorship. And so I hope we get all the way there before we are 2.5 hours into this episode. If it looks like that won't be possible, then we will continue in the direction of geopolitics tomorrow, and hopefully we'll get there by Friday. And let's start with a man named Brendan Carr, who is the Trump-appointed senior Republican member on the Federal Communications Commission. He posted this a week ago on X, formerly Twitter. The FCC just announced that we will vote April 25th on President Biden's plan to further increase government control of the internet through Title II regulations. I'm a no on this unlawful plan. Americans want more freedom on the internet, not micromanagement by government bureaucrats. And he followed up a couple days later, citing the FCC plan. The gaslighting continues. The FCC's 435-page plan for increasing government control of the internet doesn't go 2 paragraphs before falsely stating that the plan is necessary because there's no federal oversight of broadband today. There is. The FTC already has oversight authority. But in his post on April 3rd, Carr attaches a statement, the heading, Carr opposes President Biden's unlawful plan for expanding government control of the internet. President Biden's plan is to increase government control of the internet. Today, the FCC announced that the commission will vote on April 25th to further expand the government's power over the internet. It will do so by implementing President Biden's call for the FCC to impose utility-style net neutrality regulations on the internet through Title II of the Communications Act of 1934. This decision follows the 5-member FCC's partisan 3-2 vote last October to seek public comment on this action. And it comes on the heels of President Biden's demand that the FCC give the administrative state new controls over the internet through, quote-unquote, digital equity rules, which the agency did last November through a party-line vote. All of these steps are part of the Biden administration's plan for expanding government control of the internet. I oppose President Biden's plan. The American people want more freedom on the internet, not freewheeling micromanagement by government bureaucrats. And in principle, he is exactly right about that. President Biden's plan rests on a scattershot of pretextual justifications. 6 years ago, Americans lived through one of the greatest hoaxes in regulatory history, when my Republican FCC colleagues and I overturned the Obama administration's failed 2-year experiment with government control of the internet in 2017, Title II proponents predicted the, quote, end of the internet as we know it, end quote, and that, quote, you'll get the internet one word at a time, end quote. The end of the internet as we know it, by the way, was a Bernie Sanders thing. And truth be told, the internet as we used to know it has ended. The internet now just always feels like it's funneling you into one location or another where you will get the same information that you get everywhere else. I would encourage you to research something called dead internet theory. And there is a great series of videos. They are posted in my Telegram channel, t.me/veryreasonable. Just use the search feature and type in dead internet theory complete edition. You can also make that same search on YouTube and you will find that series of videos from a content creator who goes by the name All Time. Now, I'm not saying the theory is correct or that he's nailed everything down, but it is a great summation of the idea. Take the information in, decide whether or not you find it compelling. But let's continue with this statement from FCC Commissioner Brendan Carr. Since the FCC's 2017 decision to restore internet freedom, broadband speeds in the U.S. are up, prices are down, competition has increased, and record-breaking broadband builds brought millions of Americans across the digital divide. Utility-style regulation of the internet was never about improving your online experience. That was just the sheep's clothing. It was always about control. this utility-style regulation of the internet entails sweeping new government controls, but do not take my word for it. Two of President Obama's former solicitors general, some of his top lawyers at the DOJ, wrote just last week that Title II regulation of the internet, quote, would vastly expand the commission's authority and would transform the way a federal agency regulates a vitally important element of our economy and the personal and social lives of hundreds of millions of Americans, end quote. That includes targeting pro-consumer offerings under a boundless general conduct rule. Americans want the freedom to express themselves online, not freewheeling micromanagement by government bureaucrats. This utility-style regulation opens the door to broadband rate regulation. There is no more surefire way of killing off investment and innovation than putting price controls squarely on the table, adjudicating broadband rates under a quote-unquote just and reasonable standard should be a non-starter. This utility-style regulation will slow down rural broadband builds. The last thing that broadband builders across America need right now is a regulatory onslaught from Washington. Yet that is precisely what Title II utility-style regulation entails. As the FCC determined in 2017, the agency's 2015 experiment with Title II regulation negatively impacted small ISPs that serve rural communities. Indeed, those small ISPs reduced broadband infrastructure investment due to the FCC's 2015 Title II decision. Compare that to the significant narrowing of the digital divide that we have seen in the years since the 2017 decision, a decision that returned the internet to the same bipartisan and light-touch regulatory framework under which the internet flourished for more than 20 years. Utility-style regulation will hit Americans in their pocketbooks. Since 2017, the prices Americans pay for internet services have decreased on an inflation-adjusted basis. Meanwhile, the prices for utility-regulated services like electricity, water, and gas have increased over 2 times faster than the prices for internet services. Monopoly regulations invariably lead to monopoly prices. In addition, Title II regulation opens the door to regulators adding new taxes and fees to consumers' monthly broadband bills. This plan is a gift to big tech. As the past few years have made clear, big tech companies have engaged in a discriminatory pattern of gatekeeper conduct. Yet big tech companies have been some of the longest and deepest pocketed backers of net neutrality rules. Why? Because Title II regulations apply only to big tech's competitors, distract regulators' attention from actual problems, and leave big tech companies free to continue operating in a biased and non-neutral manner. This plan is unlawful, as President Obama's lawyers make clear. Just last week, former Obama administration Solicitors General Don Verrilli and Ian Gershengorn published an important legal analysis. Two respected lawyers concluded that the Title II regulation of the internet, quote, would be struck down and, quote, would be a serious mistake. Indeed, launching a Title II rulemaking would represent a massive waste of resources for the government, industry, and the public, as well as the lost opportunity to pursue more pressing goals, such as deploying robust broadband service to all Americans, the Obama administration alum stated. Or as former FCC Chairman Ajit Pai previously remarked, Title II regulation, quote, is a solution that won't work to a problem that doesn't exist, end quote. Carr writes, I agree, rather than heading down the doomed and damaging path toward Title II, the FCC should focus on advancing the many important policies over which the commission does have authority, from rural broadband and spectrum to public safety and illegal robocalls. Now, Carr is citing this argument from the Obama administration lawyers who make the argument that if the FCC were to go ahead with this, it would be struck down by the Supreme Court based on the major questions doctrine as decided in West Virginia versus EPA, which says that Congress cannot be assumed to have delegated a rulemaking responsibility to an agency, thereby allowing that agency to set the rules unless Congress has specifically delegated to that agency the responsibility for rulemaking, based on the principle that the Congress, our elected, quote-unquote, representatives, are supposed to be the people setting the rules because they have the lawmaking authority and they can be held accountable directly by the people. The agencies, therefore, are not allowed to make decisions about major questions without being specifically authorized to do so. So the illegitimate Biden administration wants to be able to regulate broadband as it does other utilities. They want to be able to set all the rules. And in doing that, they would give themselves the ability to censor in all new ways. And while that might be one of the immediate goals here, I would be suspicious that there are actually much bigger goals in what the Uniparty is attempting. I talk occasionally about my, I believe, well-founded belief that a parallel communications and energy infrastructure is being built up in the sky via Starlink and other satellites and down here on the ground with technology that can send and receive to those satellites. I've mentioned a couple times I had part of this discussion at least with General Steve Quast at GART in January, and you can hear that discussion as well by going to t.me/veryreasonable, the info stream on Telegram, use the search feature, type in Quast, and you will see it there posted on January 23rd of this year. I have absolutely no doubt that they are intent on censoring people in the short term, but long term, I have a feeling that what they are looking to do is make sure they have full control over that parallel communications infrastructure that is being built up in a more decentralized fashion that could eventually be peer-to-peer in some sense, making it so they don't have control at all. Now, staying on the topic of big tech, this is from yesterday in the Daily Caller. Jim Jordan demands docs and communications between big tech and FBI. He sent letters Tuesday to five social media companies, the Department of Justice, and the Federal Bureau of Investigations, calling on them to produce documents and records regarding any recent interactions with social media companies and the executive branch. The Daily Caller first obtained copies of the letters to the chief executive officers of Alphabet, that's Google, Amazon, Apple, Meta, Microsoft, Attorney General Merrick Garland, and FBI Director Chris Wray, demanding documents of the executive branch's recent interactions with the social media companies. In February 2023, the House Judiciary issued subpoenas for documents related to big tech's communications with the executive branch, including the FBI's Foreign Influence Task Force and the San Francisco field office. Quoting the letter from Chairman Jordan to Mark Zuckerberg, "Given the FITF's improper role in communicating with social media and technology companies during the 2020 presidential election, the resumption of meetings between the FITF and Big Tech before the 2024 presidential election is deeply troubling. These meetings stopped after the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Louisiana issued a preliminary injunction against the FBI that prohibited it from coercing or significantly encouraging social media companies to censor content, which was largely affirmed by a unanimous panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. But following the Supreme Court's recent stay of the injunction, the FITF resumed outreach with social media companies. According to an FBI spokesperson, the purpose of this outreach is to facilitate sharing information about foreign malign influence with social media companies. The communications and documentation pertaining to Meta's ongoing communications with the FBI are covered by the February 15, 2023 subpoena. The subpoena is, quote-unquote, continuing in nature. Therefore, all documents and communications relating to the FBI's new outreach efforts to Meta and FITF meetings are responsive to the committee's subpoena as they refer or relate to how the FBI is communicating with Meta regarding content moderation." So basically what we have is, as a result of the Missouri versus Biden case, which is now Murphy versus Missouri, these communications were halted for a time. Now there is a stay on that injunction and the communications have resumed. Jim Jordan is letting the parties involved know that the subpoena from last February covers these new communications as well. Now, this is another one of those rugs that no one should ever even consider standing on. Jim Jordan sent a letter, which will almost definitely be ignored, but now there is fair warning out there, and the public should understand that these communications have resumed. But Jim Jordan wasn't done. There's also this yesterday from the New York Post. Jim Jordan summons ex-Biden admin officials to House hearing on internet censorship. House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jim Jordan invited three former Biden White House officials to appear at a May 1st public hearing to discuss their pressure on companies to censor online content as the Supreme Court considers whether the administration violated the First Amendment by pressuring platforms such as Facebook to yank posts and videos. Jim Jordan invited former White House Director of Digital Strategy Rob Flaherty, former COVID-19 coordinator Andy Slavitt, and former COVID-19 digital director Clark Humphrey. After Flaherty and Slavitt flouted Jordan's earlier subpoenas, requiring their testimony in closed-door depositions. In his letter to Flaherty, Jordan wrote, "The committee has obtained documents that demonstrate the central role you played in communicating the Biden White House's censorship efforts to social media companies, including the White House's demands to censor true information, memes, satire, and other constitutionally protected forms of expression. As one of the Biden White House's primary representatives responsible for interfacing with large social media companies, you likely have knowledge about the White House officials responsible for leading the Biden censorship regime, as well as information regarding the intent behind various messages you and others sent to social media companies," Jordan added. "Internal Facebook documents obtained by the committee illustrate your specific role in threatening high-ranking Facebook executives to censor American speech, including critics of the Biden administration. These internal notes reveal that you sought to have Facebook kick people off the platform, change its newsfeed algorithm, and quote-unquote, play ball with the Biden administration's censorship demands." All right, so let's move from big tech censorship in the United States of America to big tech censorship around the world. And it just so happens it's the same companies involved in big tech censorship, and they're all doing it on behalf of the same global regime. Our media here in the United States pretends that all of this is just some kind of conspiracy theory. It's just a bunch of MAGA extremists being upset that we're not allowed to spread disinformation and hate speech online. And sure, they've got a point. Nothing is more fun to spread online than disinformation and hate speech, but that's really not the only thing we're in it for. So on Wednesday of last week, prominent uniparty left normie journalist Michael Schellenberger posted on X, formerly Twitter, Twitter Files Brazil. That's right, Michael Schellenberger went to the Twitter offices to view the Twitter Files documents and emails and all of that. He had full access last year when the Twitter Files first became national news, and now he just has extra Twitter files, I guess. And of course, when we're talking about uniparty left normies, we're talking about a set of people who still pretend, or at least did pretend, that Lula da Silva actually won a legitimate election for president of Brazil back in late 2022. Because of course, if you admit that Brazil's election has been stolen by Brazil's version of Joe Biden defeating somehow Brazil's version of Donald Trump, which was then followed by Brazil's version of January 6th, which was really just America's Reichstag fire, well, then you might have to admit that our election might have been stolen too. And Michael Schellenberger and Matt Taibbi and Barry Weiss just aren't prepared to do something like that, because then the rest of their worldview would collapse and their motivations would be just right out there in the open. This is what Schellenberger wrote in his post. "Brazil is engaged in a sweeping crackdown on free speech led by a Supreme Court justice named Alexandre de Moraes. This has been true for a year and a half or longer already. De Moraes has thrown people in jail without trial for things they posted on social media. He has demanded the removal of users from social media platforms, and he has required the censorship of specific posts without giving users any right of appeal or even the right to see the evidence presented against them. Sounds just like America. Now, Twitter files, released here for the first time, reveal that De Moraes and the Superior Electoral Court he controls engaged in a clear attempt to undermine democracy in Brazil. They illegally demanded that Twitter reveal personal details about Twitter users who used hashtags he did not like. They demanded access to Twitter's internal data in violation of Twitter policy. They sought to censor unilaterally Twitter posts by sitting members of Brazil's Congress. They sought to weaponize Twitter's content moderation policies against supporters of then-President Jair Bolsonaro. The Twitter files show the origins of the Brazilian judiciary's demand for sweeping censorship powers, the court's use of censorship for anti-democratic election interference, and the birth of the censorship industrial complex in Brazil. So, as with the Twitter Files US, we now have the Twitter Files Brazil reporting about something that independent journalists already reported and publicized a year and a half or longer prior to these standard issue villagers being granted the opportunity to get rich off reporting them. Is it an info op? Obviously it is. Is it a good one or a bad one? Well, who's to say? But the fact that it's an info op and they are lying to us would suggest that it's probably a bad one. But I know. They're just doing it all to wake up the normies. Everything we do is about waking up the normies. We have to stay behind and not think ahead so that we can guide our own lives. We're going to stay behind with the normies in order to help them guide theirs, always a few years behind. We'll stay a few years behind with them because it's safer back there and we don't want to give up on our favorite television characters. Ben Shapiro, for instance, has just been lying this whole time in order to wake up the normies. He is an absolute red pill factory, except when it comes to anything that matters on any timeline that would allow people to make better decisions. That's not what he's there for. He's there to teach you about conservative values through a lens of Donald Trump always being wrong and his supporters always being stupid and evil. You know, to wake up the normies. Schellenberger says that his findings were presented to Alexandre de Moraes and the Supreme Court in Brazil, and no one responded. Now, it's hard to call what Michael Schellenberger is doing reporting, since it is a denial and an obscuring of all prior reporting, but he is mainstreaming and publicizing this issue. But upon doing that, we have now entered a phase of conflict between Elon Musk and a man named Alexandre de Moraes, who many people might say looks like Lex Luthor, but also looks like Destro from G.I. Joe, which is just a lot more fun to picture. This is Reuters on April 7th. Brazil judge opens inquiry into Musk after refusal to block accounts on X. A standoff between Elon Musk and Brazil escalated on Sunday when a Supreme Court judge opened an inquiry into the billionaire after Musk said he would reactivate accounts on the social media platform X that the judge had ordered blocked. Musk, the owner of X and a self-declared free speech absolutist, has challenged a decision by Justice Alexandre de Moraes ordering the blocking of certain accounts. He has said X, formerly known as Twitter, it actually says that in the article, would lift all the restrictions because they were unconstitutional and called on Moraes to resign. So this guy is the leader of Brazil's Supreme Court, and he has been allowing himself the power to demand that certain accounts are banned from these online platforms. It sounds crazy to think that one political actor might have that much power to simply silence people. And that's really easy to say when it's happening in some other country. But a lot of the people who have been offended and upset by this allowed it to happen and ignore the fact that it did happen right here in the United States because they disagreed with the viewpoints of the people who were then censored. Neither Musk, X, nor Brazilian authorities have disclosed which social media accounts were ordered blocked. X first posted about the order to block on Saturday, but it was not immediately clear when the order was issued. Moraes is investigating quote-unquote digital militias that have been accused of spreading fake news and hate messages during the government of former far-right President Jair Bolsonaro and is also leading an investigation into an alleged coup attempt by Bolsonaro. So the illegitimate regime currently in place in Brazil, led not by their illegitimate president, Brazil's Joe Biden, but led by the leader of their overpowered high court, is investigating little bands of digital soldiers who were spreading disinformation and hate a couple years ago. The same playbook, with slight variations, playing out at slightly different times all over the world. I've said it countless times. I've provided countless examples. Here it is again. This is how it always has been. The good thing is that the playbook is the playbook. They don't have unlimited options. But back to Reuters. Musk, in an X post on Saturday evening, accused Moraes of brazenly and repeatedly betraying the Constitution and people of Brazil. This judge has applied massive fines, threatened to arrest our employees, and cut off access to X in Brazil, he said in the post. As a result, we will probably lose all revenue in Brazil and have to shut down our office there. But principles matter more than profit. The billionaire has pledged to legally challenge the order blocking X accounts where possible. Moraes responded on Sunday by adding Musk to the investigation he is leading into fake news on social media and opening an inquiry into what he called an obstruction of justice. In his decision, Moraes said, X shall refrain from disobeying any court order already issued, including performing any profile reactivation that has been blocked by the Supreme Court. If X fails to comply with the order to block certain accounts, the company will be fined Brazil's equivalent of about $20,000 per day, the judge said in a statement released to the media. President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva's leftist government expressed support for Moraes, with Solicitor General Jorge Macias criticizing Musk and calling for the regulation of social media networks to prevent foreign platforms from violating Brazilian laws. We cannot live in a society in which billionaires domiciled abroad have control of social networks and put themselves in a position to violate the rule of law, failing to comply with court orders and threatening our authorities, Macias said in a post on X. Elon should just censor him. I mean, it's kind of funny and ironic that these corrupt communists are telling Elon Musk how to operate his own platform on his own platform. Last year, Moraes also ordered an investigation into executives at social messaging platform Telegram and Alphabet's Google, who were in charge of a campaign criticizing a proposed internet regulation bill. The bill puts the onus on internet companies, search engines, and social messaging services to find and report illegal material instead of leaving it to the courts. It would also impose hefty fines for failures to do so. So they're actually going the extra step further than the regime's uniparty representation in America has gone. They are actually telling the tech companies, you must censor and you must take it upon yourselves to do so. On Monday evening, a Brazilian federal representative named Nicolas Ferreira posted on X, formerly Twitter, Elon said that Alexander has Lula on a leash and that he put his finger on the scale to elect him. As a member of the Brazilian Congress and representing millions of people, I ask you to give us more information. This will be crucial for the future of our country. And he tagged Elon Musk. Elon responded, writing, we need to get our employees in Brazil to a safe place or otherwise not in a position of responsibility. Then we will do a full data dump. They have been told they will be arrested. And again, if an issue begins with an info op, you can assume there is some level of info op influencing each future step as the story evolves. We know that this stuff is already coming out on a delayed timeline, and that's happening intentionally. We don't know who intended it. We don't know who's running the ops or what their ultimate purpose is at this point, but we know that there is something unnatural about the way this information is coming out and the way the story is evolving. These events are not occurring spontaneously, considering that the timeline is already delayed this far and that the information was already previously known. And so let's catch up to where we are now. This is from yesterday in the Epoch Times. Musk says Starlink will be free for Brazil schools if government cancels contract. So we have dealt with this issue before as well. We've covered battles over Starlink access numerous times when it comes to the Russia-Ukraine conflict. And time after time, it seems as though Elon Musk is making sure that Starlink is available for the people who actually need it, and it cannot be cut off by elements of this global regime. Now, to be clear, I said that's how it seems now. I am open to being wrong about that. There is a lot of fog of war when it comes to all of this stuff. But if we are trying to advance on an informational timeline and bring ourselves closer to real time so that we can be making good decisions based on what is likely coming in the future, rather than waiting for the media to tell us all this critical information when they decide to, much, much later, for their own reasons, then we have to do what we can to see the picture before it fully emerges, understanding that we are intentionally being denied crucial information that would allow us to be confident in any certain direction. That said, there are a lot of things that I believe align with this viewpoint. And if you think about that parallel energy and communications infrastructure I was discussing earlier, then Elon's position regarding Starlink fits perfectly into that picture. From the Epoch Times, SpaceX CEO Elon Musk has said he will provide Starlink services free of charge for schools in Brazil if the government chooses to follow through and cancel a contract for the service in the country. Many schools in Brazil have reported using the company to provide internet access to their citizens. Starlink terminals connect to the company's satellites in low Earth orbit and provide high-speed communications. Huh. Low Earth orbit. Man, I hope that they are able to put some Starlinks closer to the moon and to Mars for when we are traveling deep into outer space. Brazil's government has reportedly announced plans to suspend all contracts with Starlink, prompting Mr. Musk to offer the service free of charge. Starlink will provide free internet for schools in Brazil if the government won't honor their contract, he said in an April 8th social media post. The moves come amid a growing stoush. I mean, what? What kinds of words are you using over at the Epoch Times? A growing stoush between social media company X, also owned by Mr. Musk, and the Brazilian government. The global affairs team claimed the company had been threatened with fines if they didn't comply with the order. They also said they were unable to provide a list of which accounts were impacted. We believe that such orders are not in accordance with the Marco Civil da Internet or the Brazilian Federal Constitution, and we will challenge the orders legally where possible, the post from the global affairs team said. The people of Brazil, regardless of their political beliefs, are entitled to freedom of speech, due process, and transparency from their own authorities. And so consider what it means that Elon Musk would continue providing Starlink service in Brazil, even if their out-of-control Supreme Court Justice Alexandre de Moraes ends the contract or goes so far as to try to outlaw it. How could Elon do that? Couldn't the Brazilian government just cut off the access? And that is the question to be asking. Is it possible that they couldn't? Is it possible that just having the Starlink terminal in your possession and being able to plug it in to start receiving internet signal from the Starlink satellites is something that the government wouldn't be able to stop unless they sent law enforcement from home to home checking to find out whether people had a Starlink terminal? Is it possible that Elon Musk, via Starlink and this global network of satellites, has provided a communications infrastructure that rogue, hostile, illegitimate governments cannot take away from their people? I mean, if that's the case, it would be awfully hard to censor those people, because all they would need would be communications apps that choose not to censor. They'd have lost all their possible censorship points. And wait a second, can't some people's cell phones already receive a signal and data from Starlink? Yes, they can. So those people wouldn't even need the Starlink terminal. And if these tyrannical members of the regime aren't able to shut that down, then we see a clear path to the total collapse of the censorship regime, and that's before we even get into decentralized social media apps. And so I would suggest that while I don't know that this is what's happening, I don't know that Elon Musk is a good guy, this is the picture that is emerging. And if I am right about this picture and its implications, then Elon Musk would not only be one of the good guys, he would be one of the best guys, and he would clearly be involved in an extraordinarily well-designed, high-tech plan to finally beat this regime. And oh yeah, Bitcoin fits right into all of this. I'll be back tomorrow at the same reasonable time on the same reasonable podcast network. I don't have a network. Masks and lockdowns don't work. They lied to you about a pandemic. And Joe Biden will never be president.
In my mind, that's the end game.
If you're listening to this episode for free, you can support me and support the show and the work I do by signing up for a paid subscription at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as low as $50 a year or $5 a month. Comes out to under a quarter per episode, and you'll blast right through the paywall for all of the writing. The merch store is www.cancelcouture.com, and you can find everything else by heading to Linktree, linktree.com/I'm Your Moderator. And I'll see you soon out on the range.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
In my mind, that's the end game.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow what I'm reading and thinking throughout the day, you can do that by downloading the Telegram Messenger app and going to t.me/I'm your moderator. On social media, you can follow me on Truth Social, Getter, and Gab at I'm Your Moderator. I also have channels on Rumble and BitChute. If you'd like to follow the writing, you can find me at imyourmoderator.substack.com. The merch site is cancelcouture.com or go direct shop.spreadshirt.com/cancel-couture. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, the best place to do that is Ko-Fi. Go to ko-fi.com/I'm your moderator. And all of these details will appear in the show notes with each episode. I'll see you soon down on the range.
It's hell!